Hello, welcome in.
Hey, it's great? Question mark?
Well, have a seat. Sit down.
Okay.
Let's expand on that. Now, when you say great question mark, what's been bothering you?
With upspeak. That's, it's not some, there's like an implied question mark. It's just with uptalk.
When you say you're great?
Yeah.
how so?
I don't know. I mean, it's just the time of the year, right? You know, everyone's down. Everyone's a homebody. Everybody's living in Washington State. Everybody's getting 6 hours of sunlight, maybe.
Yeah.
And so you get a lot of time to, like, you know, like, think about things and think about, like, the past. Like, especially think about, like, the past. Things that happened in the past.
Oh, sure.
And I don't know. I guess, like, it's not like things are coming together and making sense. It's kind of like the opposite, where it's like things that used to just kind of be there and just accepted now, like don't make sense.
So what you're saying is there's too much woke in schools nowadays. Is that what you're saying, Jay Bearhat?
I don't know. Is woke what stopping adult women from having sex with children?
I would say yes.
Okay. I would say maybe that we could use a squidge more, because I think it's more just like, man, people talked a lot about that, like, when I was a kid. But, like, not in a bad way. Like, in a good way. Like, people were like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, like, weird. Like, now that I think about it. Like, that's weird, right? Like, that's really, like, weird.
My experience of it is a really weird Hall of Mirrors effect, where there is this kind of, like, shadow world and this kind of, you know, like, everybody on their face. If you go into the YouTube comments of any Mary Kay Letourneau video on YouTube, just as a random example.
Pulled that out of your head, has no connection to anything else.
No, just kind of thought of that one.
Right off the dome. First female pedophile you could think of.
But if you look at the comments on, like, YouTube or, like, Facebook or really any social media, like, sure, you're going to find arguments about, like, the age of consent or whatever on any social media or forum discussion. But also, by and large, the most popular emotional reactions are of disgust and sympathy for the victim, you know, and these very above the board things. And then you get to the kind of way that people seem to talk about it in real life. And, for example, the way that, like, comedians talk about it. People have this very lurid, pornographic, horny concept of statutory rape. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why it's so strange to me, is because there's, like, twofold. So, like again, just pulling a name completely out of a hat for no reason. You know, Mary Kay. She came out of the closet that we call prison in 2004.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, she definitely was on people's, like, minds, I guess, again, when I was in middle school. But I feel like there was other stories also about stuff like that happening in middle school. And people would always be like, you know, if it was, like, a male teacher predating on, like, really any student, any gender student.
Yeah.
It was kind of rightfully treated as, like, that's disgusting, that's a horrible abuse. Maybe, you know, you'll have some guys who are like, well, she's 17 in some cases. But generally, I feel like within the larger media and comedy and guy discussion of these things, there's an understanding that, like, yeah, that's a line to cross.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like when the victims were male and the perpetrators were female, suddenly a whole lot of either nuance or just guys being like, man, I wish that happened to me.
Yeah. I wish I had a teacher mommy MILF big titty to groom and control my life for the next 2 decades.
I'm hot for teacher. Oh, it's like my teacher anime fantasy come to life. I'm not going to consider whether or not, like, immature, childish sexual fantasies from when I was 14 years old might go very differently if they really happened, because they were fantasies I had basically before I knew what sex was.
I'm not going to hurdle my teenage ass into an emotionally dependent relationship that's going to change all of my relationships with my friends and family in a way that I can't predict, but an adult probably could predict.
I'm just going to mentally project on, like, Riverdale high schoolers this concept that, like, all teenagers look and act like they're 25 years old, and not that, like, say, a 12-year-old child very clearly looks like a child.
We're here to talk about May, December, aren't we?
Which, God bless this film, probably one of the first times I have ever seen something dealing with this stuff that is actually just, like, without explicitly saying it, depicting, like, middle school-aged, like, characters in these kind of situations, and just kind of being like, by the way, this is what a middle schooler looks like.
That scene of Elizabeth scrolling through the, like, auditions and just being, and, like, getting on the phone with the director and being like, they're not sexy enough, yeah. You know? He was probably really sexy when he was 13 years old!
It's so insane how well they capture, like, that specific type of brain sickness of just, like, her literally confronting to her face the fact that 13-year-olds look like children and going, but I met this guy. He's hot. I met this 28-year-old man. He's hot.
I met this 30-year-old who, this 36-year-old who acts like a 16-year-old that I imagine was probably hot 20 years ago, I guess. It's so completely absurd and perverted and insane. This is my movie of the year. Movie of the year goes to May, December. It's movie of the year award.
It really is the Tar for straight female pedophiles.
This beats Tar's ass, in my, if you're asking me.
I mean, I think that's fair. No, I think that's fair. I'm kind of thinking of it. I mean, I think part of the reason it beats the ass is just because it's a lot more... the condemnations fly fast and thick in this film without ever being preachy. Yeah. Whereas Tar is really more about, like, kind of a cartoon character of a person. Which is real.
Yeah.
Which is real. People like Lydia Tar absolutely exist and absolutely are cartoon humans. But I think what makes this movie great is that it kind of implicates, like, it fucking is implicating everybody it can implicate, including itself.
Yes, 100%. It's like, they're shit, she's shit, she's shit, he's shit, you're shit, I'm shit, we're shit. Like, in the most astute and, like, beautiful and artful way that it could have possibly put forward. I mean, like, just the dialogue is all so, like, meaty and so, like, they get so much across with every single line. And just such a stage play type of film in a way that I really, really appreciate.
Which is, like, such a great return to form for Todd Haynes here. And I think really gets at, like, how Gaiman sensibility sometimes is great for tackling really, really thorny things. Because I feel like, this is my read on it, like, what is called camp, and I don't mean, like, Azalea Banks being homophobic on Instagram. I mean, like, sure. Camp. Like, actual old camp. Comes from this sort of, like, gay Death Wish thing of, like, oh, the melancholy of life is so absurd, especially when you are, like, marginalized or victimized in some way, that, like, you kind of can't look at it directly, because yes. presenting it directly doesn't even really capture it. You kind of have to make it a bit of a joke, a bit of a, like, you have to kind of, like, make it a little bit more absurd than it actually is to get across how, like, fucked up it actually is. And you see that a lot with, like, old school camp, and why it deals with a lot of, like, really heavy themes in kind of flippant ways, but it's like that flippancy is kind of a way of, like, getting it across without having to be, like, too melancholic about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, May December is just another perfect example of movie by a gay guy about women, where just a searing lens on the structures of misogyny. There is such a structural knowledge here of like, how women, not even so much how they're treated, but, like, how they have to navigate and how to make, like, an interesting, horrible woman.
Yeah. No, I think the reason, and also, like, the thing, going back to the thing you said, so you were, who haven't watched the film and are really put off about it, it is based loosely but with very overt references to the Mary Kay, how do you pronounce her last name?
Mary Kay Letourneau.
Mary Kay Letourneau.
Or Letourneau, if you want to be super French with it.
90s tabloid / 2000s tabloid focus, because she was an adult woman who groomed and raped a child that she worked with.
Yes.
Or not worked with, a child that was, like, under her care as a teacher. And who kind of throughout the entire saga of her life insisted that it was consensual and that they loved each other and that she didn't even know it was illegal, which is probably the most insane lie I could think of. Just as a side, I like that they kind of put a little bit of that in the film, where they make Gracie, like, play up this idea of naivete and then consistently throw in these things that completely undermine her claims to be naive.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of sort of both direct and indirect parallels to real life Mary Kay Letourneau that exist in May December. For example, at the end, when Julianne Moore is giving those lines, like, who was the boss? Who was in charge? Who was the boss? Who was the boss? Who was the boss? That's based on this, like, infamous interview segment where Mary Kay Letourneau is kind of, like, doing an abuse tactic on camera.
Oh, I didn't know that was directly from, like, a thing she did. Holy shit.
That was quoted from her. It's a crazy, crazy clip. I gotta send it to you after we're done recording.
Okay.
But then also, like, the whole thing about, like, there's a lot of just, like, inconsistencies, or not strictly inconsistencies with her case, but, like, places where she pretty obviously, like, lied, you know, and like, for example, like, the letter that was, Natalie Portman reads, toward the end of the film, it's very, like, something similar to that happened, where it's like, oh, they looked in Mary Kay Letourneau's, like, love letters or her diary or some shit, and it was just like, oh, she definitely knew what she was doing was, like, at least going to be perceived as wrong / illegal.
Yeah, like I said, like, just an insane attempt of a lie to be like, oh, I didn't know that was illegal. It's like, what? That's like, that's like the first thing you learn is illegal. God, I did not know about that interview thing. It makes sense that the film would draw from this case, especially because it's probably the most famous and documented one. Also very funny, since the film it's very critical of making a movie based on this, the events that happened in it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
the way there's like these tiny little editing and musical cues that are like TV movie ass fucking moments.
My God.
Leading to the final scene being on this set of the most TV movie ass looking film I've ever seen.
It's genius.
It's so good.
It's pure genius. And I do have to, like, I know I said, I called this flippantly a movie by a gay guy, but Sammy Burt's the screenwriter, is a woman.
Oh, I didn't know. That's really good.
Which is cool, yeah.
She did really good. I forgot that Todd Haynes doesn't write his movies. <He's> like, hey, you want to hear the insane next movie that she wrote? Don't click. Guess before we go anywhere else. Guess what project they brought her straight from May, December onto.
The Warren Jeffries biopic.
Coyote versus Acme.
Awesome! Awesome! From, oh, that's in development hell, too.
From one slapstick to another.
One comedy movie to the next. Hey, I mean, same shit, right?
Right?
Like, fucking May, December. The fucking Joe in May, December might as well be fucking slamming a mallet on top of his head throughout the movie.
God. Oh, the scene where he like smokes with his dad, like smokes a cigarette with his dad and like looks like a 15-year-old trying to smoke a cigarette.
That, oh God. I obviously Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman, like, I'm sure everyone in the world has sung their praises, but like everything about Charles Melton's like physicality and the way he presented this like arrested development character was so utterly spectacular. The scene at the end of the movie where he's like physically completely like locked up and triggered and like trying to talk to her about their relationship was just like ugh.
And she just like immediately turns it on him, and then you see the next day and he's just like playing dad.
Yeah.
Playing dad and like crying the entire time that he's doing it.
Just silent, just crying his way through it. And like all of his like his weird relationship with his dad and just like the strained nature of everything. I also want to just for a moment, the side characters are the fucking best characters in this movie.
This film has a lot of just great cast. Great cast, great set of characters, great ensemble. Yeah.
Georgie is my favorite character. My two favorite characters are Georgie and Honor, for completely different reasons.
Georgie is her son from the previous marriage, right?
Yeah,
the one who's just like the fail son.
He's the bisexual fail son singer in a bar, who like tries to bribe Elizabeth as to like let him be the music producer for the movie,
which he appears to believe just means that he makes like a mixtape for the film.
Yeah, it's so fucking funny. He's the greatest. He has and the fact like he has such a central like purpose in the story toward the end of the film. I don't know, just like his character is just really spectacular and super magnetizing, whatever you want to call it. And then Honor is just this like kind of wiser, like older sister to these two twins who are just like still being kind of abused by their mother.
Yeah.
And just, like, sees through everything and is just talking mad shit the whole time. A really intense and, like, smart focus on, like, kind of the way something like this affects other people and the way that, like, Gracie is, like, presents this front of being incapable of even thinking about how her behavior affects other people.
God, the scene when she just has the fucking meltdown because the person doesn't want cakes from her anymore.
Oh my God! Their mother is sick. Who cares?
God,
it doesn't matter.
I just he's like, okay, it's fine. And then she's like, but then like I can never like just like total like everything in my life is wrong because there's one less cake I have to make. And just like how that's the payoff for this scene where they're like, yeah, people just kind of do that to like keep her busy. Like, nobody needs that many cakes.
They're just being fucking nice to her, but it's like her whole, ugh, it's like her whole sad little dollhouse life situation. It's so funny that these people have to move to take care of their, like, dying parent. And she's like, I wasted 3 hours! They're not even gonna eat it!
Just losing her mind at not only wasting 3 hours, but this idea that, like, now that that's one last cake she doesn't have to do, like, she has to face the yawning void in her heart, I guess.
It's a real Toni Collette in Hereditary moment, yeah. There.
I am agog at how evil Natalie Portman plays Elizabeth.
It's so fucking awesome, because obviously with like a Gorillas in the Mist kind of like thing like this, you're gonna want her to be the straight man character.
Yeah.
But she's so not.
She's like exactly as evil as Gracie. like that's what's great about her, is that she's like super manipulative as well, is constantly like also trying to do, like, seeing their characters bounce off each other where they both speak in plausible deniabilities.
The way that she kind of starts to, like, she tries to kind of like obviously there's this whole thing where she's trying to kind of like become Gracie in this very like persona inspired sort of way.
Oh yeah, and her makeup her makeup and styling over the course of the film, my boyfriend notices, like, is literally like she just starts to look more and more like Gracie. Like she starts, like, is still clearly, and which is funny because then at the end of the film, in the TV movie, she looks nothing like Gracie. So she was just doing all that for herself.
Yeah. It's insanely funny. It's insanely funny that the ER style show that she's an actress on is called Nora's Ark.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That shit is fucking awesome. And yeah, just her like the way she talks to men, just overall, and like she's such her own like portrait of like a woman navigating through patriarchy or whatever. The fact that everybody's like cheating on somebody with her, seemingly.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. There's like the detail that it's like every she absolutely her evil thing is that she likes taking married men.
And I guess like these kind of like sort of rapturous acts of like character work or whatever, like her pretending to be fucked in the back of the pet store.
Oh God. Yeah,
completely hilarious.
She's, I think that's the thing about her character that's great, is that it's like she does these things that like at the start of the film just kind of make her come off a little like, okay, but be serious, like you're playing like a movie that's like, and you're like kind of at like really close to something that's like pretty fucked up, and you're not really taking it seriously. And then as the movie goes on, it's just, it's like, oh no, she is taking it seriously. She's just like about it. She just thinks it's like cool.
She's taking it actually way too seriously.
Yeah, she needs to like tone down the taking it seriously a little.
The way she has like the same, she kind of circumnavigates around the same complexes that Gracie kind of suffers from, and like doesn't also recognize how weird it is for her to be like, yeah, I like playing complex characters. That's why I'm playing your mom.
Yeah. No, exactly. Just like, oh, well, she doesn't even just say complex. She's like, oh, isn't it like fun to play characters that are like a little evil? And then is like, again, like the plausible deniability. She's just like, why are you so upset that I said that? What, did I say something to upset you? You seem really upset that I said I love playing evil characters and that it's fun to play a character who's evil. In it, as I am hanging out with you, doing research to play you. Doing research to play you before a massive audience.
Also, another like small thing. There's a lot of like little small things to notice. As with any movie that you can see with your eyeballs, but Elizabeth's parents, she says that they study epistemic relativism.
Yeah.
Which, according to Google, is the thesis that there are no epistemic norms over and above the variable epistemic norms operative in different local cultural settings or contexts. I didn't know what that meant. Until just now.
Oh, so basically, like, okay, I get it. Like, relatively.
Yeah, kind of like morality norms are agreed upon. You know. Which is a kind of like part and parcel with her like funny fascination with Grace of being like, oh my god, she's so clean slate every day. She doesn't like regret anything. And by the way, that scene. Of like that scene of the like flower arrangement and like Grace totally overpowering her flower pot.
Yeah.
And just being like, oh, you just sit around all day and you like think about stuff that you did.
Yeah.
That's weird.
so fucking funny. That's such a funny, like, I think what I like about it too is that it implies that like Gracie herself is also kind of emotionally stunted.
Oh, absolutely.
Which to an extent makes Natalie Portman's character like almost more sinister because she's a lot more like cognizant. Not to downplay or excuse, obviously, Gracie's character. Because Gracie's character is shown to be pretty aware of what she's doing as well at various moments.
Oh, yeah, she's a total control freak.
Yeah, she's absolutely also is, like, fully aware of what she's done and is a bit of a sociopath about it. But Gracie is shown to be a lot more just kind of, like, willing to go there and not care. Whereas Gracie, obviously, is a lot more, feels a lot more like, ooh, I don't want people to think bad of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, she's definitely... Elizabeth's a lot more... I guess I would say cavalier. She's more... I don't know. She's very city girl. She's so, like, I don't care. This is what grown-ups do. Oh, God.
God. Oh, what a... Probably easily the most evil line in all of history.
Like...
Just like, you bitch, you know what you fucking said. You fucking know what you're saying when you said that.
Yeah. I mean, to not clock, like... To not clock Joe's, like, emotional reality and the way that he's going to, like, respond and, you know, kind of be very teenager about the whole thing. In a way that's, like, not even wrong of him, you know? It's like, I don't know. You feel so much. This film definitely, like... kind of is a vote of confidence to all the people who feel like a sense of I don't want to say pity, but just like compassion and empathy for Willy Fallau, I guess, or and like, you know, victims of grooming and sexual abuse, like, and I think to be able to do that in such a like three-dimensional way is very It's praiseworthy and it's very cool.
Yeah. No, I would call the movie praiseworthy. I think it's a good movie.
I think it's pretty good.
But no, because it's like I think for because we mentioned this before, a gay man, but it's like specifically a gay man to make a movie about essentially national obsession with sex crimes and pedophilia and the ways that it's kind of like treated as a plausible deniability outlet for maybe less than ideal desires. At this specific time, at this specific point in time, it feels very pointed too. I will say
yes, completely. Like it's holding a mirror up to society, and what it says is that everybody's full of fucking goddamn shit. A lot of people who I think to insinuate or to use grooming as a sort of political gotcha for any one group, as it seems to be kind of getting deployed on homosexuals to a degree that is kind of unfair and also delusional. You really gotta think about where the sausage is made in terms of just like the compulsions toward grooming and sexual assault. Gotta really think about the patriarchy. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
Gonna have to start reading a little bit of feminist theory around these parts.
I would say that, like, the film is especially interrogating kind of both the historic Nancy Grace-ification of sex crimes and definitely the modern Nancy Grace-ification of sex crimes.
Yeah. And the way that, like, the way that the conversation has, like, aged and I don't know, just kind of like the weight of the past, or, you know, sort of the recent past, I guess. Just because, like, that shit happened a little while ago at this point, which is weird to think about, because, like, I do remember it more or less as like a kind of contemporary fervor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it was... Like I said, it was everywhere. And I mean, like, there's also the, like, other forms of culturally acceptable pedophilia that, like, were super prevalent in the same time frame.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
The everyone is familiar with the like, countdown clocks for, like, the Olsen twins or Britney Spears.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of ways in which, like, the rules, for lack of a way to put it, of pedophilia don't apply to heterosexuality. Actually, like, another movie that I would put this film in conversation with on stuff like that is, oddly enough, Happiness by Todd Solondz. The other Todd. specifically because there's a sequence in it. So one of the main characters in that film is like a pedophile who preys on boys. And there's a scene in the film early on when basically the kid that he ends up grooming, he gets pointed to by the kid's father because the kid's father is like, look at the way he's like throws that ball. Like, look at the way he's like eating his food. Like, my kid's like a fucking idiot. Like, I gotta stop this somehow. And then he just like openly is like, I should buy him a prostitute. And the character, who's a pedophile, is like, he's 12. And the dad just goes, you're right, it's probably too late.
Ugh.
And it's of course, later when, you know, it turns out that, like, it comes out that I think it's Bill Pullman. I forget the actor. But when it comes out that he's like, groomed this kid, it's that dad calls him and is like, I'm going to fucking kill you. And it's so, like, it's not commented on the film, but it's so, like, literally the entire reason he targets this kid is because the dad talked about paying an adult woman to have sex with him.
Oh my fucking God.
Like,
bro.
Just brilliantly subtle little way of just like, hey, kind of fucked up that, like, the first thing that guy said was normal, but the consequential action of that is, like, is correctly seen as fucked up and evil.
Yeah. That's just nuts. People are fucking nuts.
And that shit's, like, also super common. I know that there's been, like, multiple celebrity interviews about, like, you know, being like, oh yeah, you're a man now, 13 years old.
Yeah.
Let's go get you some pussy. Like, it's an insanely, like, common thing and common approach with teenaged men or other such categories of not marginalized people, but other such categories of people who are not extended the same expected grace of childhood.
Yeah, that's a big thing. God, it was really heartbreaking to watch one of the final shots of the movie of Joe watching his kids have, like, a normal graduation, unencumbered by court cases and national tabloid attention. Which is not to say, like, you know, completely and totally normal, but, like,
yeah,
you know, comparatively.
No, it's him crying because it's like, it's so obviously that it's both, like, you know, a father's pride, like, there's my kids grown up, and, like, the recognition of, like, oh, I didn't get that. I basically didn't get that because of why these kids exist. The fucking crash zoom in the opening film on Julianne Moore or Gracie being like, I don't think we have enough hot dogs. Do 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 do. Fucking made me, like, lose it. So, like, I know I mentioned this before about camp, but, like, it cannot be undersold how much this is, like, a gut, funny movie that you do not want to laugh at.
Yeah. There's a person I follow on Twitter who is describing an experience, at a screening where some guy got up and was yelling at everybody for laughing and just screaming about how May December is not a comedy. If I can find that,
so funny, because it's like, I've had that experience of, like, people laughing and me being like, it's not a fucking comedy, but, like, bro, it's a Todd Haynes movie.
It's a comedy. That shot specifically, that happens at the beginning of the film, where it's like this enormous piano riff, crash zoom, hyper dramatic, and then audio cuts out. Julianne Moore, I don't think we have enough hot dogs. Like, unmistakably, like, the comedy moment of the year.
Yeah. No, that is absolutely supposed to be funny.
It's so fucking, like, hilarious throughout.
The way, like, he can make a scene both gut-wrenching and also hilarious, with the classic one being, Joe getting way too high on the roof with his son.
So fucking funny.
And just like, I'm sorry, this is probably a traumatic memory for you.
Oh my god.
So it's fucking, like, funny.
Oh god. Just everything, it's skin crawling. It's like tragic and it's so hurtful and it hurts your heart. But, like, in the same way, like, all of the scenes of, like, the parental abuse on her kids where, like, and, you know, great acting moments from all of these kids where, like, the two, like, fraternal twins the scene where they're trying on dresses for under the robes, oh, and they're like, God. She's like nitpicking her about the sleeve length and calling her fat and all this shit.
And doing it in that way that's like shaming without explicit, like the line is something like, oh, you know, like when I was your age, I wouldn't have been brave enough to like not wear sleeves because like people would see how fat my upper arms were.
Just the fakest compliment.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm not going to get what I want from you by telling you that you shouldn't wear that. So I'm instead going to like dig at your like literally child, like teenager, like child, like self-esteem.
I know. And like the same shit with the son, like just being like, you need to drink your milk. Everyone at college is going to think you're so scrawny and you skipped a grade because you're so fucking small. And you're like a small little baby boy. God. And you're not big and sexy like your 14-year-old father was when I went after his ass. It's just like, ah! It's like every relationship is like so affected by this and by like just Gracie's like complexes and
every relationship has to be like a power struggle for her.
Joe's thing about butterflies and like releasing butterflies free into the world, and I don't know, you know, so go watch a YouTube essay. Anyone can talk about the symbolism here.
I even just like the obvious narrative thing of like the person he's talking to about butterflies, who's clearly the only person who's ever shown like just interest in him and his interests without some weird ulterior motive, and then he gets his heart broken because she reminds him that he's married.
Yeah. Oh God, he's doing this like seventh grader version of cheating on his wife where he's just like, I think I like you.
That's what if we went to Spain together to see the butterflies.
Let's go look at the butterflies. You're nice to me.
Even
you're nice to me, and that works on me.
Yeah,
and
that like I think that probably had much more to contribute to the scene near the end where he confronts her than fucking Natalie Portman's dumbass. Like, that obviously, like, gets under his skin and pisses him off and, like, fucks him up, but it's so obvious that, like, the thing that's kind of getting him to question his relationship more is, like, feeling what a nicer relationship to another adult could be like, to somebody who's actually an appropriately aged adult. And probably also seeing Elizabeth and Gracie interact and just being like, I don't like either of these women.
I mean, and just like between I think Elizabeth's affair with him kind of contributes to it in the sense that I think he sees her as, I mean, he really probably, you know, in spite of what Gracie says, because Gracie is kind of just full of shit all the time, Joe probably sees everybody as, like, more adult and, like, experienced than him, which seems to kind of influence a lot of, like, how he talks to other people and, like, how he carries himself. And so there's this just, like, feeling that, like, this is his one life, and maybe he did it wrong.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know, that's fair and sad. Maybe he should get into polyamory.
I don't think Gracie would go for that. For some reason.
I love also the part at the end where like Elizabeth is like trying to help him by giving him advice, and she's just like, oh, she'll be fine. And he's like, no, she won't. She actually won't is the thing. Such a searing and smart portrait. It's and fucking just hilarious and entertaining and so juicy. Because, hey, at the end of the day, we're shit too for looking.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's really how the movie even ends, is like it ending with the creation of another film like itself and just being like, hey, look familiar? Isn't this disgusting?
Yeah.
Why did you want to watch this movie?
Isn't this lurid? Doesn't this make you feel cheap? Doesn't the focus on, you know, these types of dalliances and sexual relations and broken families and trauma, isn't that, you know?
And there's the great line he has where he just gets mad and he's like, story? And she's like, you know what I mean? Because that's like what it really is. It's just that it's like, you know, the creation of traumatic life experiences or just experiences that like have completely encapsulated a person's entire life being simmered down into gossip and lurid tabloid display and TV movie. By the way, still so funny how much she's like justifies so much about wanting to get to know Gracie's character better. And just the movie they're making is the like least interrogative possible fucking movie for what it looks like. Like, it just like doesn't look anything like her, doesn't act anything like her, despite like acting like her a lot over the course of the film. It's just like, yeah, it's just basically porn. And she's just justified spending all this time with the family for that.
Oh my, like, it's so perfect that it's an Obama-era film, because I feel like post-pandemic, you are not getting, like, a paid research trip for this dogshit Lifetime movie that, like, is gonna suck. I mean, I know that it's part of her, like, sugar daddy experience with this director, and her great line about how the crew wrap sweatshirts are gonna have to turn into crew wrap mugs and shit.
God,
she's insane.
She's so evil.
She's so evil. She's so goddamn good. But yeah, like, I don't know. Just funny to me that and kind of indicative of it taking place in 2015.
While we were getting ready to prepare for this episode, I remembered the funniest thing about this, about everything related to this. So the original Mary Kay story did take place here in Burien, Washington. Not here in Burien, but here in Washington. And the payoff to this is in 2020. as many of you know,
oh my god.
In 2020, Mary Kay died of colorectal cancer. Or maybe you don't know that. She's dead.
I just remembered where this is going.
She's dead as a doornail. But she died in 2020. Specifically,
she died R.I.P.
July 6th, 2020. That's relevant, because if people don't quite remember, that would have been at the height of the George Floyd protests. Specifically, yes. This may seem like it's going, you're like, where the fuck is this going? Trust me, it is going somewhere.
If you're a listener of our podcast, you'll want to know.
So, July 6th, that's the height of the George Floyd protests. Specifically, the big ones in Seattle, Washington. We famously had Chaz, all of this stuff, huge conflicts. The Seattle Police Department fucking abandoned their police station and placed a 12-pack of Gatorade inside like a fucking Elmer Fudd trap.
This was after they had basically used the like a chemical weapons amount of like mace, pepper spray.
People like got the things and they were like expired like tear gas from like military grade tear gas from I think Israel. It was definitely something where people were like, "Whoa, this is getting crazy."
Enough to fog the neighborhood and get into apartments above that area and like, you know, affected kids and like families and stuff, but you know,
and
whatever.
Made it so you could actually get an apartment on the hill again because people fucking fled left and right after that.
Blue lives are keeping the rent down, huh?
You've heard of going out and firing a few shots off to keep the rent down. Get tear gas, that'll keep the rent down. But throughout all this, our star of the show, Carmen Best,
chief of Seattle Police Department,
giving the sloppiest, worst like speeches like left and right, constantly just like saying shit like, we are not going to tear gas protesters. And then, like, 2 hours later, tear gassing protesters. Like,
yeah.
One of the, like, most audacious, absurdly, like, mad of power police captains. July 6th. Mary Kay Letourneau was a teacher who became a tabloid fixture in the late 1990s after she raped a 13-year-old student and later married him after serving a prison sentence. She has died at age 58. The New York Times, 15 minutes ago, immediately under that, a reply within 15 minutes from Chief Carmen Best. Sad about this. RIP.
So if you are wondering about the preview image for this episode of the podcast, your question has now been answered.
Our police chief, at the height of getting all this like attention and flack and focus on her because of her handling of the protests, decided to take time out from police brutality to say, man, I'm real torn up that this 58-year-old woman, who in the post I'm replying to, reminder, raped a 13-year-old, and that's what she's famous for, died today.
That bitch got off the stage of a press conference and venerated a pedophile.
Yeah.
On social media for all of us to see.
And, like, not that even a pedophile, crazy. She had to. Like, that, it wasn't like a fucking, like, politician.
Yeah.
Like, Bill Clinton didn't fucking die. Like, you don't have to give your opinion on this woman.
Jay will literally, like, someone will cancel plans in a group chat and Jay will respond, sad about this,
because I was, like, obsessed with it, because it's, like, the most insane, like, already extremely funny for a police chief to tweet that about a convicted, again, child rapist. In her own state, but so much funnier to tweet that at that point in time when literally the whole world is watching you.
When and any other time, no one's going to be combing through your replies or your likes or whatever, but it is the 2020 protests. You see what's happened. It's a war out there. It was literally a war. The cops waged war on people, on us. And the generals are out there being like, oh man, she was really a trailblazer fucking that kid. She was so...
R.I.P. to a real one.
R.I.P. pouring one out for her.
Carmen, you know Carmen Best was getting those fucking cakes delivered.
Oh my god. She might have been. She could have been.
It was all local. All that shit was local. She might have known Mary Kay. I literally can't think of any other reason to respond like that unless you personally knew her.
I mean, yeah. Or unless you want to, like, play the victim and be like, well, everybody is so mean to me. I knew her and she was a complex figure and blah, 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 blah.
Extremely funny if she, instead of saying the sad about this RAP, just the day it happened, pulled the, like, someone I know just died today. I don't want to talk to anyone. Turns her profile black. Turns her profile black and locks it. Nobody talk to me. Somebody I know just died today.
The Neytiri, I hear of great news on your world or whatever. God.
But yeah, now you know why that's our thing. And if you ever see me post the screenshot of Carmen Best saying sad about this RAP, that she was responding to the bitch from May December dying.
Ugh, isn't life grand? What a rich pageant.
Yeah, you know what? I think everything's gonna be okay. Not for the actual Joe. I'm sure the actual Joe is not doing very well. I'm not gonna look it up. I'm not gonna pry into his privacy. I did see while looking at the article earlier that he's a professional DJ, so that's a terrible sign.
That's... keep my mouth shut. Godspeed to him. I hope that's going well.
Okay, I will say, a month before her death, he did say, according to people, that he sees things clearly now and he realizes that this wasn't a healthy relationship from the start.
Yes, they did like divorce and they had like, you know, very, very many different like stages of separation.
Yeah.
When she died, they apparently got to say a lot of things that they hadn't been able to say to each other, which is a thing I shouldn't know. But, you know, he likes to make those TV appearances, which is like all well and good and fine. I get it.
Bro, I can't think of any... You know something is wrong in your life if the first Wikipedia citation on your... first citation on your Wikipedia is your certificate of death hosted as a PDF at TMZ.
That's just bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's
things bad. Things went bad. Went bad for you somewhere.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Well... I hope you're feeling better. I hope you're, instead of just feeling great, you're now feeling great.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling pretty okay about it all. Uh-huh. I think things are gonna work out just fine.
Last session your insurance canceled, so.
Oh.
You're actually in several thousand dollars worth of debt now.
Oh jeez. Do you take check?
You're going to have to talk to my lawyer about this.
Sad about this.
Sad about this. R.I.P.
R.I.P.